For instance, temple is a place for prayer. For instance, temple is what? A sacred place. Yes. That is a lot of things are prohibited to do in a temple. Yes. Third, not necessarily the Tahitian Dravidian religion has all of them together. Third, it is a place of communion with God. Yes. Fourth, it is a place where the whole community or congregation, all adherents of that God or deity, gather, come together. Yes. And in India, of course, and fifth, of course, God Almighty, my memory, you know, it lets me down from the very childhood. I cannot even say that it's getting worse and worse. It never was good. And of course, all those four meanings are in fact second, third, fourth, and fifth. The first meaning, it is a place of what? Sacrifice. It's a place where the ritual is performed. I think I forgot to put it in the first place. Yes? Okay. And very often that is why it is sacred. Yes. Okay. The sacredness of temple is one of the pillars of modern, early medieval, and ancient alike Hinduism. Temple is sacred. Yes. And what did we see several years ago? One of the most enlightened persons in India. That old idiotic woman, Madame Gandhi, gave orders to her security forces to raid what?
The Golden Temple,
yes. And it was extremely interesting. After that, in her interview, and minded, in a certain way, she was a very well-educated woman, yes, excellent educated woman, and politically astute and clever, and with a great practical acumen, yes. And there was a fight in the Golden Dance. How could she do that? Find it. I'm not asking that question from the point of view of reason. I am not asking that question because I'm a great humanist, which I am not. I am not humanist at all. I am asking that question from the point of her own Indian culture. You know, to destroy the temple in medieval Europe, Christian temple, was an absolutely ordinary routine business. Yes. The Catholic Hungarians destroyed German Catholic temples. A German fight, Smargraf, destroyed, not to speak of that, Jewish synagogues. The Huguenots destroyed Catholic temples in Languedoc, etc. It was a routine business, nothing to speak of. It was an element of our own pre-enlightenment Christian culture, yes. But for heaven's sake, not in India. In India, to destroy a temple, to fight in the temple, was regarded, to put it very mildly, as utterly tactless. indirectly, it should have, if not ought to, have brought about her downfall. Yes. What do we see on this occasion? It is her oblivion of her own culture. Because from the point of view of purely politically, not to speak of military expedience, it was highly desirable to destroy that wasp nest of terrorists. Yes, it was full of terrorists. So each and every normal general or minister would have ordered to destroy it immediately, but you know what a mental state of normal minister of general or general is. Yes, they mind their own business and destroy the temples. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm not against trying to understand it. A cultural point of view is a very specific point of view, is a very different point of view, but it has to be taken into account all the time. Now, let us forget about today. Nothing to be proud of. Let us return to the middle of the first millennium BC, to Gangetic Valley, central part of the North India. We are coming across the second very important cultural notion. That is again notion which after having been crystallized became culture. And this notion is very important, and it survives until the present. It is a notion of Maya. What Maya is illusion. But you know, illusion is probably the best, but by no means satisfactory rendering. Because what illusion implies, or what it, speaking logically, ought to imply when we say, oh, listen, it is illusion, it implies what? That there is something which is not illusion. You understand this?
Delusion would be better.
Well, you know, no, I would insist. Delusion, it has some implications which refer to your inability to perceive the things properly. Whereas illusion very often, and particularly in ancient and even present days Indian context, illusion means that which is illusion in its own nature. That is, it is illusion not because you are stupid and cannot see the truth, but because it is meant in itself to be illusion, irrespective of whether you are a genius or a moron. Yes? And that term influences practically all religious philosophical teachings, all religions, and to some extent common speech. Common language. When an old wandering Brahman or sadhu in the 3rd century BC, in the 3rd century AD, or in the 20th century AD says, oh, Brahman, 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 everything, Sarvamaya, everything is illusion. Yes. It means that
everything is illusion.
That is, you are illusion, I am illusion, he is illusion.
Everything is illusion.
But what is not illusion?
Brahman. But Brahman is not illusion.
But we cannot perceive it. Which means all our perception is illusory. And must be so. And if even if we are what? Einstein's, yes. Niels Bohr's, yes. Who was another great man of our century? There were very few, too few to mention. Yes, the Lord, yes. Their thoughts are also illusory in terms of Brahman and Atman. And, but why to whisper Maya, Maya? Why to babble about Maya all the time? It has a great cultural meaning. It returns you again and again to what is not temporal, to what is not limited by the conditions of your temporal and spatial perception and reasoning. And of course, what is totally illusory in the first place is your own mind, your own intellect, your own capacity of perception. And but what does it mean in practical terms? Is it a kind of, or was it, it is the same, absolutely pessimistic cul-de-sac? Dead end. No. You have to change being yourself. You have to get rid of your mind and your body and become a knower of Atman Brahman. Then you won't be in illusion. Well, I'm simplifying everything. But it is extremely relevant to us to conceive of that term as already within the culture, including even a low-level culture. It's an extremely important thing. Because such terms, such notions, such ideas as Atman Brahman and its opposite, as it were, yes, it's in a way complementation, yes, illusion. That which is not Atman Brahman, it in a way gives a culture and human understanding a totally different dimension. It offers some different criteria. You may say unrealistic, unfulfillable, yes, but it doesn't. The 20th century hitherto has lived by absolutely unfulfillable social theories, and they failed as any other right-wing or left-wing social theory would fail, because the premises are totally illusory. Yes, that is, that we are good in our nature and can make a good society. And a good world. But who said we are good in our nature? I am not saying we are bad in our nature. The Buddha said what? We are neither good nor bad. We are what we are. I particularly emphasize that term illusion, because it gives to us a certain, not necessarily negative orientation. It makes one, shall we say, cautious and skeptical with respect to one's reasoning, which is, according to the principles of European Enlightenment, is limitless, is striving to the common good, common wealth, common health. That is, reason and reasoning in the vocabulary of Enlightenment is a kind of common denominator of universal happiness, which from the point of view of very, very moderately developed Indian merchant of the 4th century BC would be sheer humbug, a kind of mentality of a moron, yes. And it's extremely interesting point, and my impression is that probably sooner or later our own poor culture would be duly enriched by introduction of something which does not pertain to the dilapidated treasury of the ideas of European innovation. It is funny, isn't it? But enough is enough. We cannot live by the same stable notions and repeat like parrots, or rather parakeets, 300 years. Oh, we were good, you know, universal justice, universal equality, universal health, universal wealth, universal... There is only one thing universal, with your Congress permission. Illusion. And from my point of view, it must make one very optimistic, not pessimistic, yes. The third notion, which was crystallized somewhere, probably in the 4th or 3rd century BC, and which is a very interesting counterpart to the idea of Atmanbrahma, is the idea of Ishtadevata. My young lady, do render it into English immediately.
Chosen deity.
Well,
once chosen deity.
Once chosen, once desired deity. It is a very interesting idea, and more specifically Indian than the first two. Would you please explain to the ladies and gentlemen here what it means? Explain it in sort of more, shall we say, popular and conceivable way than I am going to do. Start.
I don't know what it means.
Have your desired deity?
Yeah, sure.
Yes. Okay, do explain what it means.
Okay, it's the...
Louder, please.
It's the particular form of divinity that you worship.
Yes, undoubtedly so, but a little more. Do elaborate on it.
The devotee sees that as the as equivalent to the ultimate god or whatever godhead.
Yes, we are going up. Yes, to Atman, Brahman, to Shiva, yeah, to Vishnu. Okay, but try to discuss it on a sort of more, shall we put it, horizontal level. yet, with the help of your Ishta Devata, aspiring to become a greater saint. Yes? You aspiring to become what? A great dancer, or a great scholar, or a great merchant. Not you, I hope. You won't do it. Yes. That is what extremely interesting. That Ishta Devata, your own desired deity, may be any manifestation of Shiva or Shakti or God Ganesha or God knows what. That deity is with you all the time, not only in terms of your vertical development, yes? Not only in terms of your becoming a great saint, probably you will become in the end, I still hope, yes, not now, no, a Pazankor, yes, but also in your own worldly affairs. When we speak of religion, and Indian religion in this respect is practically as any other religion. The horizontal aspect of your religious behavior is very important. You know, you pray God not only to make you better, yes? If you do that, yes. I don't, because I cannot burden him with such an unbearable task, yes. Not only to become loftier, yes? More spiritually elevated, but you ask God to mitigate your suffering now, to make you successful, yes? To make you prosperous merchant or a good teacher, or to give you some money to subsist on and to educate your children. I do not know what. And that horizontal aspect of religion is extremely important one, and is not to be ignored or neglected. Ishta Devata, literally desired deity, literally, absolutely, minded deity and devata is the same in the European world. The same root and even the same suffixation. T-A in the end corresponds to Latin T-A-S, like libertas or liberty in English, and deity, it is as it were Godhead. Deity. Devata, they and deva are two absolutely the same words. You know that, yes? Of course. We speak our own in the European language. In a way, we speak highly corrupted Sanskrit while speaking English or Russian or German or Lithuanian or Polish, yes? It's the same in the European languages. You come only to try and you will know all of them, yes? And Ishta Devata was a notion which gradually developed as a, in a way, as a result of a very long combination of the ideas of great gods and goddesses and of Atman, Brahman and of your own human conditions. It was not a logical process. It was a very gradual, very slow, purely, shall we call it in single quotes, historical process. So, to each and every ancient medieval and to an extent present day, Indian, each and every god has, or goddess, sometimes and in some areas, far more often goddess than god, assumes its concrete form absolutely concomitant with your own being, with your empirical being, practical being, social being, family being, almost physiological. It is particularly interesting that that notion was one that in the course of time was incorporated and became one of the central notions in the Mahayana Buddhism. You know that, yes? Particularly in the Buddhist tantras, where apart from earthly Buddha Shakyamuni and the five so-called families or Kula Buddhas or Tathagatas, you have a lot of divine or celestial bodhisattvas, and each person, apart from the Buddha or one of the five divine Buddhas, has his or her own personal, so to speak, divine bodhisattva, as his own or her own guide. And each Ishtadevata, and the number of Ishtadevata, as far as I can establish, and I'm very bad in mathematics, I was expelled from secondary school 3 times for failing not only mathematics but practically everything, and then from university too. Yes, complete inability to learn anything reasonable. Yes, but according to my estimate, the number of different, when I say different, what does it mean? Possessing a different name. You understand it? And possessing a different prayer, a different invocation, and some minimum of different texts connected with the Ishtadevata. The number of them in the Hindu pantheon exceeds 8,000. But of course, it is incorrect. It must be far larger. Speaking of the Buddhism, particularly in Tibet, where Ishtadevata are assumed Tibetan name, what? Yidam. Right. Y-I-D-A-M, Yidam, the number of such Ishta Buddhist deities in Tibet, in the Tibetan pantheon, again according to my highly bad estimate, there must be far more, is somewhere between 25 and 28,000. So what more than that, what is extremely interesting, both in Hindu and in Buddhist pantheons of Ishtadevata, they very often are hereditary. That is, they pertain to certain families, or certain families pertain to certain Ishtadevata, or a group of Ishtadevatas, amazingly enough, particularly in Buddhism, in Mahayana Buddhism, in Tantrist Buddhism, properly speaking, one person may have
more than one Ishtadatta.
He or she may have two or three or four. One of my acquaintances, a Tibetan monk, has 42. But he's a very talented man. Now, would you be so kind? I know that now practically you have nothing to do. Yes, almost nothing to do. There is one, a very good book. My impression is that I have already recommended it to you. But I cannot remember. David, did I ever recommend you folk here to read Danilo Hindu Puritanism?
No.
Never, yes? Then it is my omission. Yes? So, the name of that marvelous French scholar, if I'm not mistaken, already late, yes, Alain Danielou, very easy to spell, D-A-N-I-E-L-O-U, Danielou, Hindu Polytheism. It is much better in French than in English. Translation is reasonably disgusting. Now, you know, I do not press you to read it in 3 days. There are several copies in our cursed library. And with all that humbug produced by Students' Union and by the top of our novel institution together, yes, they cooperate brilliantly in producing it. You agree with me, I hope. Absolutely. It was absolutely wholeheartedly made cooperation, yes. And they succeeded, you know. It was a great alliance.
I don't think they see it quite like that.
Sorry?
I don't think they see it quite like that.
Of course, but nevertheless. Please, you know, the thing is, I would like to instruct you about, you remember, you use the catalogue from time to time. Our catalogue is also reasonably catastrophic, but still you can use it, yes? Mm-hmm. With the help of those computer words, something, mm-hmm. Yes? I never use it, yes? Because they have bad eyes, yes? Anyway. You may find several copies in totally different places.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
Yes. Do concentrate, please, on the basement. There must be two copies in the basement, and at least two in the ground floor. Now, I'm not asking you to read it in 2 times, in 2 days, or even in 2 weeks. Start reading it. Give it to, well, one husband. It is a marvelous book, and I want you to read it, and it would be very, very useful for your exams. And you are going on, I gave you some reading on Buddhism,
yes?
And please do return to our primary materials, yes? That is to some Buddhist pieces, and do reread them. And don't forget, in a fortnight, I will be expecting you to appear, not all of you together, but one after another, to discuss your marvelous essays. By the way, my first impression is that they are not at all bad.
These seminars, do you want to go? They clash with your tutorial.
No, I am not inviting you to seminars. I'm inviting you particularly to the first, the second, and the last lecture.
Can't make the seminar.
Sorry, you cannot come today. What a pity. Sorry.
Do you want?